Welcome to the Old Galway Diary podcast. Each week, Tom Kenny and I, Ronnie O'Gorman, write a column in the Galway Advertiser. Before it goes to press, we contact each other and share what is filling the page that particular week. This podcast is that conversation. And I would add, we enjoy talking to you and would appreciate if you would give us a rate and review on the Apple Podcast app. Tom, good morning. I believe Kenny's are selling gold coins with books now. What was that story?
Well, you know, you should realize, Ronnie, as an educated man, that any time you go into a good bookshop, you hit strike gold anyway. You know, every book that you pick up, it's a piece of very valuable, whatever you want. You know, you can draw your own conclusion.
I agree with you.
But yes, we have made a discovery.
Extraordinary.
In a breviary, an old breviary,
right.
Very carefully hidden in the spine of this breviary. If you remember the missile that you might have had as a young fellow,
I do.
The kind of a wraparound leather cover on it. Yes. That's exactly what was on this, and very carefully hidden. It was wrapped. These coins were wrapped in paper. So there was no evidence from the outside of the trace of a coin or anything like that at all. And they happen to be Mexican. They're a commemorative solid gold coin. And, well, obviously, they belong to a priest who we assumed had these as some kind of insurance for a possible quick escape, if necessary. Anyway. It's a kind of a romantic thing.
Yeah,
we spoke to the institution from whom we bought them. And they said, well, look, we sold these to you. You found them, so they belong to you. But we're not gold sellers or indeed gold diggers, I hope.
Yeah.
So we are going to, we're still researching them. Yeah. And we're going to eventually either auction them or sell them and divide the proceeds between Ukraine, Red Cross Ukraine, and the Simon community.
Right. Tom, it's an intriguing.
Yes, it's been quite a discovery and a very interesting romantic story, really.
Yes, I know. Wonderful. It was obviously put there as somebody's, you know, running away money or something like that.
I think so, Like, they are quite valuable now, you know. We're not sure, but they're certainly worth about 5,000 euro.
I'm sure.
So,
Excellent. Well, you're right.
A very happy discovery, really.
I know, wonderful. I loved it.
Yeah.
Yeah, great story. And you're right about the value of books. One never knows.
Oh, yes, indeed.
So listen, Tom, on a beautiful, fine morning in Galway, what have you got for us this week?
Well, I am talking about an event that happened exactly 100 years ago this week in the city of Galway. And that was a statue that was dragged down by the local population.
I know the one.
Now, one of the great artists that this country produced in the 19th century was a sculptor called John Henry Foley. He was commissioned to produce many, many public works all over this country and in many other countries as well. And this included one for Galway, for the city of Galway. It was a statue of Lord Dunkellen. It was 2.5 meters high in bronze. It was on a red granite base, which stood on two steps of Aberdeen granite.
Right.
And it was placed about 20 yards in from the gate of the park in Eyre Square.
Right.
It was on the location where Páirc O'Connor would be situated later. Excuse me. And, you know, like, as I say, Foley had a huge reputation, and this particular piece was described as none of the great works that have given him worldwide celebrity has he shown more genius and skill than in this instant, when with only the slender assistance of a photograph, he was able to produce a faithful likeness. Dunkellen, in fact, had died a number of years previously. Now, not everybody loved this statue at all. In fact, before it even went up in an editorial in the newspaper of the Nation, it said simply, what I complain of, as and I think the people of Galway have reason to complain of, is this, that the only public square in Galway, the only one that has been railed and planted by the people's money, should be sacrificed to pander to the ambition and please the vanity of friends of Lord Dunkellen.
Right.
Is there any reason why the people of Galway should place Lord Dunkellen among the immortal gods? Sacrifice their public square to honour him and bow their heads as they pass along the public street in honour of Lord Dunkellen. I answer emphatically no. So, yes, there was resistance already, and it was hardly surprising. Dunkellen was a landlord in South Galway, the son of Lord Clanrickard. He himself had quite a distinguished military career, and he was elected MP for Galway, but he was a very nasty bit of goods in the landlord area. He treated his tenants very, very badly.
So I heard.
And indeed, they had to kind of pay for a huge amount of this statue, and very often under threats, all kinds of various threats. They hated him.
Oh, yeah.
Simply hated him. So when the unveiling occurred in September 1873, the Nation once again reported, most of the nobility and gentry of the county were there, but of the people, there seems to have been scant attendance. And of course, that is why, that's the reason being they hated it. Now, the John Reddington was the chairman of the Urban Council. He had to make a speech accepting this thing.
Yeah.
And with a particular gratification on behalf of the trust, etc., etc., I earnestly hope this statue may remain for future generations as a symbol of social harmony. Etc., etc. Well, of course, far from being a symbol of social harmony.
Yeah.
Landlord tyranny is what he was a symbol of. He, man who seemed to want to kind of push down every trace of Irishness in his tenants. He treated them like dirt. And when he died, his younger brother, who became Lord Clanrickard, he was even worse. He was in the eye of the storm. That was the Woodford evictions, which became world famous.
Yes.
So the resistance to this statue continued. In 1886, there was a motion proposed at the town commissioners that this board remove the statue of Lord Dunkellen to some less prominent position more suitable to his character and the character of his successor, the Marquess of Clanrickard. Well, there was uproar at the meeting, but finally it was defeated by 12 votes to 7. But it was an indicator, you know, that there were... Over the years, there were quite a number of threats to the actual statue. Anyway, it survived until 1922. Yeah. And the British Army had scarcely marched out of Renmore Barracks when it became a target. And so on the Galway Observer in May, on this week, reported, on Thursday night, a crowd numbering several thousands assembled inside the square, and two men set to work sawing at the base of the life-size bronze. A rope was procured, it was tied around the neck, and with a strong pull, over it went amidst great applause. And after some speeches, the statue was dragged in a kind of a mock funeral, if you like, through the streets with a band playing Irish reels and jigs and things. And it was taken out to the pierhead. And as it was being thrown into the water, Mr. Larkin, who was one of the head people in the Galway Tenants Association, it was they who organized all of this. He said, let it go, boys, and may the devil and all rotten landlordism go with it. And amid joys of joyous laughter, screeches, the band played I'm forever blowing bubbles.
Oh,
So it was a very
yeah.
interesting, as I say, the Town Tenants League were the main people behind this. They had been very active already campaigning for entitlements for urban dwellers that had been given to the farmers during the land war. They wanted more interesting, when we think of today, they wanted more local housing and the freezing of evictions.
Oh,
The other interesting thing about this is that the following morning, the statue had disappeared from the Keith train.
yeah.
But it was the most, no, it wasn't the only hated statue to be removed by Republicans after the British left. You know, there was the Earl of Carlisle went in Phoenix Park, and Lord Nelson, of course, well, he
Yes.
lasted until 1966.
Yeah, I remember.
But the whole thing is kind of strangely familiar when we think of that statue of the English landlord who was involved in the slave trade. His statue had been torn down in
That's right,
Bristol
yes, that's
and
right.
horsed over and dumped
Yeah.
into the sea
Yeah.
there. Now he was associated with slavery. One could easily say that Clanrickard or Duncullen was associated with slavery as well, enslaving his tenants. Now, but it was a magnificent statue, like the photographs, and there is a photograph in the paper this week of it, and it shows just what a fine statue it was. But
Yeah.
it was what it represented was anathema to the population.
Tom, it's a great story. Now, it didn't lie forever in the Claddagh Basin, did it? I seem to he I think I heard that it was
It
removed.
was gone the following morning.
Oh.
It was never seen again after they dumped it in.
Right.
It was never seen, and that's what I say. It must have been somebody who understood the value of bronze, but
Yeah.
also who had the equipment to lift it, because it would have been a very heavy item.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And taking it out of the river, So anyway, but it is a good story, I
It's a
agree.
great story, Tom, and I like the way you can link it into the people involved in slavery who then gave great monies to be, elevated in universities in England and things like that. It's a difficulty, really. Should we let history be history? Should we leave those statues where they are in today's thinking? I'm not sure, but I think justice was paid anyway to that
Oh,
terrible.
yeah, absolutely.
There's no doubt. Great, Tom.
Absolutely.
That is just great. And you have a photograph, of course. That is
I
lovely.
have of the statue,
Well done.
which incidentally there was a final little adjunct to that, and that is that they eventually removed the base, which was a fine piece of stonework in itself, and it went out to Castlegar, where it is forms the base of a
It
monument
does. It
to
does.
the IRA,
It does indeed. It does
which
indeed.
is a very ironic twist,
Yes. Well, it shouldn't have been wasted, I suppose.
Oh, no, oh, I absolutely
Yeah,
agree.
that's
Absolutely
great.
agree.
That was a great ending to it. Yeah, that's absolutely wonderful. All right, Tom. Well, that is just great. And I think everybody will appreciate the irony involved in all of that.
Yes,
Well,
indeed.
anyway, look, I am finishing finally the whole Connemara tit for tat thing that I began 4 weeks ago. This is my last week. And, in a sense, I'm kind of glad to be finished it because it's tough going. And the more you read, the more, as I said at the end of last week, the more you read of the struggle, the difficulties, and the huge energy and effort that people made to wrench this country away and to give it the independence that we, you and I, enjoy today. But there was a last battle in Connemara. Now, this is very interesting because I've written before about the O'Malley family, the O'Moyles, in the Mam Valley, an extraordinary family, several different cousins who lived and worked mainly in the sheep trade. But they decided to homeschool their children. They were not happy with sending them to the schools that were supplied by the state. They homeschooled their children brilliantly. And as a result, even to this day, the O'Malleys have been, you know, to the forefront of medical and educational careers. They really are an extraordinary family that emerged from that era and from the Man Valley and triumphed in the intellectual world. But one of their great heroes was a man whom I got to admire very much. He was Pádraic Mór O'Malley. And Pádraic Mór O'Malley was Pádraic Mór because he was well over 6 feet tall. And he had a farmhouse called Muinchir Eoghan, which was backed by rock and heather covered. It was on a small rise, Tom, along the Mam to Leenan Road.
And Indeed.
The most important thing about it as a military place, it offered a commanding view of the Mam Valley. And this is where Petey MacDonnell and the West Connemara IRA Brigade made their headquarters. And of course, you know, Connemara is a small place, believe it or not. And of course, everybody knew that that's where the IRA had their headquarters. So it was only a matter of time before it was going to be raided. And that raid happened in a spectacular fashion on April 23rd, 1921. Again, not so very long ago. We're coming to the end of the War of Independence, which I'll try and conclude later on in the podcast. But at 3 a.m. in the morning, Tom, before dawn, one of the sentries in Muinchir Eoghan noticed movement in the valley. And he notified MacDonald that through the darkness and early morning mist, there was definitely a party of police gathering on the road. Now, under the command of poor Detective Inspector Sugro, 14 policemen travelled by lorry out from Galway and from Oughterard with guns and bombs. And they then stopped a distance away and transferred to bicycles, which were taken out in a similar vehicle so they could approach Muinchir Eoghan silently, or so they hoped. The defenders, however, immediately mobilized their own men, and they had been preparing for this, so they took their prepared places and waited for something to happen. And of course, they heard the police crossing the river using stepping stones and splashing. And then a funny thing happened. A shot was fired by the police. Now, I believe, you know, the RIC were facing difficulty at this time. Maybe somebody in the ranks wanted to warn Martin Mór and the IRA that they were coming. A shot was fired, which would have been very unusual for a shot to be fired if you were creeping up in the enemy. So I'm assuming that was fired in a kind of a friendly gesture. But of course, the element of surprise was lost anyway. And the RIC dived for cover behind sod fences, turf stacks and sand pits. Even they hid along the bank of the river itself. And as the dawn broke, the IRA opened fire. And the sound of gunfire echoed through the hills. Now, there's lots of descriptions of this in the Connacht Tribune, in the Observer, and indeed in folklore of that area. And I've heard several different versions of it. Anyway, it would become the longest battle in the War of Independence. And after 2 hours of sniping, Constable John Boland, who had taken cover behind a low sod fence on the roadside, poor man was hit in the legs and his neck, and he died almost immediately. Now, there was another sergeant, Constable Rutledge, I'll come to him in a moment, who was also injured. The Connacht Tribune reported a constable claiming, and this is kind of spaghetti Western territory here now, the constable said, "Bullets whizzed all around us like hailstones. Bullets ploughed through the bog and the road while we lay there inactive, except for an occasional opportunity to fire, knowing that if night came without relief, we were doomed."
They had a tendency to exaggerate greatly. Yeah,
definitely.
Especially the danger to themselves and the numbers of the enemy.
Exactly, Tom. Yeah, and of course, and of course, you'd be very relieved to get home safely. So you'd be more inclined to color your story. But anyway, a chance to escape did, however, happen about midday when a car driven by Francis Joyce, carrying some workmen back from work, drove unwittingly into the fray. Constable Rutledge ran towards the car, jumped on the running board of the car amid a hail of bullets, and ordered the motorist to drive like hell, which the driver did. A long range shot, however, hit Rutledge on the arm, but he clung on to the car for dear life. Anyway, having escaped, Rutledge raised the alarm at Mam Cross by phoning headquarters in Galway, prompting an immediate release. R.F. Cruz, the divisional commander of the RIC and the army and the black and tans and God knows what, a strange man, headquarters in Eglinton Street, which you've already described, Tom, previously. He led an armoured car and a dozen or so lorries carrying police and military speeding to the rescue. Meanwhile, poor Father Cunningham, who heard, he was the curate in Linan, he heard about shooting and somebody was killed. He arrived at the scene, got out of his car, but MacDonald's men thought, oh, there's another RIC man, because he was dressed in dark clothes, and opened fire on the priest, which was a terrible thing. The priest ducked down under the car and remained there for the duration of the battle. Anyway, the reinforcements arrived about 3:30 that afternoon. The battle had been almost 12 hours in length. The IRA, now running out low in ammunition, began to move out into higher ground and actually out of sight. The armoured car sprayed the O'Malley home with bullets, while swarms of police and soldiers, this is an eyewitness account, swarms of police and soldiers converged on the house, firing rifles and machine guns. They only found poor Mrs. O'Malley, her two young children, an old woman servant and a young girl from a neighbouring house hiding in the outer buildings. Miss O'Malley expressed fears for the safety of her children, but she was assured that nothing would happen to them. They were taken outside away from the house. Bombs were placed under the four corners of the roof, and the house, Tom, was blown up.
Yes, indeed, yeah.
The outhouses were searched. I shouldn't be laughing, really. There was a poor man killed. But apart from that, it was really an extraordinary event. The outhouses were searched. They found bedding and food, which would accommodate up to 40 persons. Several cattle and sheep were shot. And then the next day, Sunday, the swarms of soldiers in RIC searched the hills and the moors all around the O'Malley, all around the Man Valley. And of course, no arrests were made because they didn't find anybody. Now, the story is particularly interesting, I think, because of Pádraic Mór O'Malley. He heard a legend as a child that among the Connemara Hills would be fought one of the last battles in a successful struggle for Irish freedom. O'Malley always recognized this battle, Tom, the battle fought on April 21, 1921, as a fulfillment of that legend. And of course, no better man than Pádraic Mór to have been there to instigate that legend, to bring it to fruition. It's a great story that he did.
Yeah, the Brits actually deployed airplanes to track these men in the mountains.
Well, that's very interesting. I didn't have that now. That's
But they were very highly skilled at camouflage as well. And they were kept moving as well. They dodged them for quite a long, long time. But they threw literally the kitchen sink at them in attempts to capture them. The Brits did, including, as I said, the airplanes, but never found them.
Never found them, I know. Mm-hmm. Well, we're actually, this is in April 21. Then things were coming to a climax. And King George V was in Belfast the following June. That's April, the battle, June 1921. King George was in Belfast to open the Ulster Parliament. And he made a very famous speech. Now, remember, he is the present Queen's grandfather. He made a very important speech, where he asked that finally, common sense must prevail, weapons should be laid aside, and, we should look for commonality between our two nations. And he urged that some kind of talk should begin. Now, Collins, I know, was delighted to hear this. He was running out of ammunition. The War of Independence was becoming very burdensome. You know, the Brits were getting cleverer, as you say, using aircraft and things like that. The War of Independence could not have gone on indefinitely. So Collins seized the moment. And as we know, December 6th, 1921, we mustn't forget those dates, a treaty was signed, Arthur Griffin Collins and his team with Lloyd George and his team. So that kind of brought that section of the war to a close. And, you know, I had great admiration for the Queen of England when she came to Ireland and so understood the history of the two nations and so well expressed it. Yes. And this was in 2011, you know, where she had that phrase, with hindsight, we can all see things which we would have wished had been done differently. Had not been done at all. Yeah. And I think that was an excellent sentence of reconciliation, considering her old uncle and members of her family were killed by the IRA. You know, she saw that things should have been done differently, or not done at all. So that's it, Tom. I'm bringing that phase to a close. I'll no doubt do something on the Civil War much later, but I'm kind of glad to leave it behind. But it's a very interesting period. It is just over 100 years ago. It is worth people reading and learning about it. And if any grandparent or still has the memories to tell their grandchildren what they remembered, because it's very much part of our history and very much shaped the kind of people you and I are, Tom.
Absolutely. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Well, we'll leave it there, Tom.
Okay, right, for another week.
Well done. Thanks, Tom. I enjoy talking to you. Take care, Tom.
God bless.
See you soon. Bye-bye.